Well, Ken, it's good to talk to you again. You were the last musician I interviewed for my radio show when I was here at WCWP before I stepped out of radio.
I remember that interview well. I'm honored that it was your last one, and I'm honored that I'm the first one now that you're doing them again.
Since then, your last album, The Meeting Place, came out, did very well, I would assume. To The Grace of Summer Light.
That's right, my summer release.
What was the inspiration for this one?
Well, the inspiration for this was memories of growing up in the 1960s and how I felt in the summertime of that time of my life and wanting to create a record that just kind of captured as close as you could with music some of the feelings of not only that time of year, but that time and back in the 1960s when kids didn't really go to summer camps and have all these activities. We just went outside and played all day long and just explored the world, you know. So that was, I guess you would say, half of the inspiration for the CD. And then the other half of the inspiration was more of a spiritual area where I was trying to create music that paralleled my own personal search for spiritual meaning in my life. And somehow trying to find the common area between that sense of summer and the grace of summer light and that pursuit of what our light on earth is, why we're all here and what it all is about. And so as music, particularly instrumental music, seems like a very good way to try to express some of those feelings and thoughts in a way that other people, without words, can put their own meaning into the music they're hearing.
And the end result is The Grace of Summer Light. So let's go through all the tracks on it, all 10 tracks. We begin the CD with Just Before the Dawn Prelude.
Yeah, that was originally a solo guitar piece that I turned into an introduction for the whole record. And I think it only lasts about 30 seconds. You hear the full piece at the very end of the record. So it's the song that begins the album. And then you hear the full version to end the album. And so I just thought it was a nice way to bookend the music so that you got a feeling of a story being told.
Transition right from Just Before the Dawn Prelude to Blue Skies, Bright Dreams.
That's exactly right, because I wanted to make sure that the listener got that sense of a story being told, that first chapter, so to speak, went right into the second chapter, Blue Skies, Bright Dreams. My idea for that was that I wanted to have a theme, a very catchy, beautiful theme that you heard right at the beginning. And then you would hear it in the middle of the song, and then the song would end with it. And that's how that song started. Of course, it turned into many other things, you know, once I started writing it. But that was the musical inspiration for Blue Skies, Bright Dreams.
And once keyboardist Jay Rowe added in his synth brass.
Oh, yeah. Jay contributed so many nice keyboard parts and sounds to Blue Skies.
And, of course, you had the additional keyboards on that track and many tracks on this album.
Yes, there's a lot of parts.
I played
some of them, Jay, some of them. Sometimes Jay and I, because we have worked so long together, and we're both always so focused on just making the music as good as it can be. Because of all that, sometimes Jay and I can't even remember who played what, you know,
yeah.
Because we're kind of operate like one, you know, and that, which is really nice.
And while we're on the subject of Jay, let's go over the rest of the players on this album. Tom Kennedy is on acoustic, fretless, and electric bass, but on this track, and on many of the tracks, he's on acoustic bass, and he has a fretless bass solo here on Blue Skies, Bright Dreams.
Yeah, that's right, Mike. It's interesting. Tom is one of those very few players who plays both electric bass and acoustic bass so well that you don't really know which is his primary instrument. most bass players that I've worked with who can play both acoustic and electric, it's usually pretty obvious, especially when you do a whole record with them, which is the one they really feel the most accomplished with, and the other one tends to be what they double on. You know what I mean? They can pick it up and they can play it, but it isn't their first choice. But with Tom, I really don't know. He plays them both so well and with so much feeling. It made him very valuable for this particular album. So, yes, on Blue Skies, Bright Dreams, he played acoustic bass, which is probably what he plays on most of the record. But there is that wonderful fretless bass solo that he plays as well. And then later, it's not a solo, but the fretless bass comes back in at the end of the song, too, and has a nice little accompanying part that goes all the way into the song once he comes in.
And also Joel Rosenblatt on drums. He's the next player that we're going to name here that was on this album.
Yeah, Joel, many people and many of your listeners might remember Joel from Spyra Gyra. He was their drummer for about 15 years, and played on most of the big Spyro records, the most famous ones. Joel was fantastic. I couldn't have picked a better drummer for this music. He has all the fire and excitement that was necessary, but he has a tremendous amount of finesse in his playing, and he has... For me, what was, I guess, most appreciated about Joel was that he had so many delicate sounds, cymbal sounds, and dynamics. His control of his volume level was, he has so many different increments in his control of his volume levels. He just was the right guy to play this music because the music itself demanded somebody who had a very strong sense of dynamics. And also knew a lot about the texture and how to best make the drums fit the music.
Now we move on to track three, the title track, The Grace of Summer Light.
Right, and I remember I sent you a copy of my demo of this song,
right.
Didn't I?
Yes, you did.
And your email was very appreciated at the time because the title song, track three, as you said, The Grace of Summer Light, that was the first song that I wrote for the CD, and it was so different than anything I had ever recorded before. I was a little concerned how people might react to it. I thought it sounded just like me, but it wasn't, you know, one of those beat funk grooves that so many smooth jazz guitarists do, and it was much, much more sophisticated than that. And of course, it was like an 8.5-minute song, too, and I remember I sent you and a few other people whose opinions I wanted to hear, and I was so pleased when you got back to me and told me that you loved it and you really got it, understood it. That was a sign to me that I was on the right path. So anyway, yeah, the Grace of Summer Light was something that I wrote, literally the very first thing I wrote for the CD, and that's basically what started the whole album going.
And this track varied in time signatures, right?
Yes, it does. It actually goes back and forth between 7/4 time and 6/4 time. And then there's sections that are in 4/4 as well. The challenge for me on the Grips of Summer Light song was to be able to write a piece of music that used unusual time signatures but didn't make the listener feel like they were listening to unusual time signatures. And that was my challenge that I made to myself musically on that song. How do I do that so that I create a new kind of a rhythm, but the listener doesn't feel jarred in any way? And I think I was pretty successful with it.
And depending on how long the homecoming game went this afternoon, we played The Grace of Summer Light in the first half hour of this show.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear that. It remains probably one of my top two or three favorite songs that I've ever composed and recorded. So I'm glad to hear you're able to give it some airplay. That's great.
Yes, but it all depends on what happened.
I know. I understand.
But even if our listeners didn't hear the whole thing here on WCWP during this show, they're hearing it in the interview, just a snippet of it.
Right.
We move on now to track 4, On My Way to Somewhere, the longest track on the album.
Mm-hmm, yeah, this one's over 9 minutes long. As the album develops, it gets deeper and deeper, at least that was my intent. And this song, it's really three different pieces of music that are put together to form one whole piece. It starts off with a very energetic driving section in an odd time signature in 7/4 time. And then segues into this almost classical section with strings and cello and flutes. And Jay even does a synthesized harmonica part. And then that segues into a third section, which is almost, I guess you'd call folk jazz, because it involves strumming guitars, but with a very acoustic upright bass and drums. And I play like a 3 or 4 minute long improvised solo that just builds and builds and builds. It's probably my favorite song from the Grace of Summer Light CD because it more or less encapsulates everything I was trying to say, and it also has a lot of the message about spirituality that I was trying to go for as well. For me anyway, it speaks volumes of what I was trying to say with the record as a whole, so I was pretty satisfied with the way it came out. It's not the easiest thing to notice because he blends so well, but Joel Rosenblatt's drumming, particularly on the third section, I think is just really beautiful, and I find myself going back and listening to it just to hear how Joel plays on that. The middle section of On My Way to Somewhere also has sounds of children playing in it. I don't know if you had noticed that.
I did notice it. I heard it, but I didn't know what it was.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I didn't want anybody to think exactly what it was. I wanted them to get more of the feeling of it, you know? And there's something about the little kids on a playground. I actually recorded that because my house is near an elementary school. And I blended that with the sounds of some thunderstorms and things like that. And it's all put in there with all those classical instruments.
So those were actual kids that you recorded from outside your house?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that was stock sounds.
No, it's not. I thought, you know, I'm not sure where you'd find. I guess you're probably right. Somewhere on the internet, there's stock sounds like that out there.
But the reverse gong that was in it, you used it on Try Again 18 years ago.
Yes, you're right. Between part 2 and part 3, there's a transition, a surge, like a crescendo, a swell that happens. Many things make swell happen, but a big part of them is the sample that I used on my first album on the song Try Again to open up Try Again. Yeah, you got some good ears that you picked up on that.
Yes, I listened to it so many times from late April when you gave this to me at Smooth Jazz for Scholars up in Connecticut to the present that, you know, I picked up on all these things.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I mean, that was my idea, to make a record that had so much detail that you could keep listening and listening and keep discovering new things, because that's something that I personally love about my favorite records that other people have done.
Now we move on to track 5, Perfect Circle Sun.
Yeah, that's probably the closest thing to a regular song on the whole CD, except that instead of using the band, it's all me. And what I did was I used 5 electric guitars on that song, 2 acoustic guitars, and then I tuned an electric guitar much lower so that it could play a bass part. So when you hear Perfect Circle Sun, you're actually hearing a song with 8 guitars. So that was a fun one. And then at the end, I tried to create the feeling of the sun actually coming up at the beginning of a day in that last section of the song.
We move on to track 6, the first track with Kevin Prince on percussion. One of 3. Before this, you provided the percussion.
Yeah, I did a lot of the percussion stuff myself. When I write an album, I make very elaborate demos. In fact, that's how I tend to do that, just so that I know how things are going to sound and I work out all the kinks, so to speak, before I bring in the actual musicians.
And this track is Daddy-O.
Daddy-O, that's right, which, by the way, now my son, every time I call him on the phone, he answers, "Hey, Daddy-O." So I'm glad I called it Daddy-O, but now he's got something to tease me about.
Right.
But yeah, Daddy-O is an interesting song because I think that of all pieces on the album, I think it has the most sonic qualities like the music of the 60s. And it was that bongo part that Kevin Prince played that made me go, "Oh, this should be called Daddy-O." You know, like the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin made a huge contribution on this song. And I also think that Tom Kennedy's acoustic bass playing on this one is pretty special, too. He really just makes that instrument talk on Daddy-O. And I think between him and Kevin, they've created something very unique about that song on the album.